You know who didn't come up that way? Every other mongrel here save Oats. Chief was never a slop, not truly. Warbler either. Cat was, but not as a bastard. Slug, Anvil, Thresher? You're not going to trust them because they were fighting in pits, riding in arenas, or working a field instead of fetching you a fresh skin of wine? Pardons, Chief.
Fetch shook her head, face flush with a somber pride. Jackal's jaw bulged.
Never said a rider had to be a slop, Cull. And you're talking from your hind end. You got no notion what the Black Womb is.
Culprit's mouth twisted with thought.
No, but it sounds like they got their own form of slophead, and that's what Hood was. You going to fault him for having loyalty to them over us when that's what he knew first? Be like the chief blaming you for following the old Claymaster.
I don't care a fuck what his past loyalties were, only where they are now. And I say there's no way to ever know.
He saved both our lives, Jack, Fetch said. He's loyal to the Hoof, same as every mongrel here.
Jackal set his jaw. He didn't defy the chief's assurance, but neither did he accept it.
How long have you known? He asked.
Since the cradle.
Why tell us now? Anvil asked.
When Fetch answered, she swept the entire Hoof.
Because I'm about to ask you to ride into the greatest danger you've ever known. And I can't do that if you don't trust one another. Crafty could use Hood's past as a weapon against us, but only if it's a hidden blade. By knowing now, we've disarmed him from sowing division later.
Oates' scalp began to crawl.
Crafty. You don't mean... He offered to help us win this war, Fetch said. It's time to accept.
Hell's overburdened, Jackal muttered, pacing a few steps away.
You in earnest, Chief? Polecat asked.
I am. There's no choice. We won't withstand an attack from Hisparfa. Kalbarka was our chance to blunt their invasion, but taking it was too costly. We can't hold it.
Then we don't hold it, Warbler said. We fall back, make the Frails hunt us. No need to throw in with the Tyrkanian to keep fighting.
For how long, Warbor? To what end? They'd only gain ground and we'd only lose it. We'd be lucky to last a season. Without the Unyars, we've little hope. Now,
Fetch took a slow breath.
If Strava rides against us, we're through.
Then we strike first, Jackal said, turning to face the chief once more. We ride to Strava and rid the lots of Zirko.
With what army? Fetching asked him. Our numbers are shattered. The shards are gone. Won't be long before the Tide and the Brotherhood follow them. The mongrel hoofs are days away from being what we were. Nothing but dwindling bands looking to their own survival. We didn't have the strength to challenge Strava before. Sure as shit don't now.
Then we go, Jackal said. Just you and I. Zirko fears you. His actions prove it. But he failed. He schemed and he betrayed and sent his deadliest servant, and still he failed. We shouldn't wait. We go now, and...
What, we take his head? Fetch said. The hero father, high priest of Bellico? Do you believe one foiled attempt to kill me has left him powerless?
It can be done, Jackal insisted.
And it may come to that, one day. But revenge against Strava does nothing to stop Hisparfa. They're coming, from more directions than we can watch, in more numbers than we can defy. We call them Frails, but we're seeing steel in them. It gags me to say it, but Crafty was right. It took all the strength we could muster just to take Kalbarka. We've little left for what's coming. That's why it's time to accept his offer, to ride with him into Hisparfa, to wage a different war. A handful of mongrels won't make a difference in the fight here. But up there? They could be the difference between victory and defeat, especially when they're the best damn mongrels I know.
But, Chief?
Polecat rubbed the back of his neck.
Hisparfa? That's the bull's own field.
I won't order you to do this, Fetch said. You've all earned the right to fight and die where you please. I'm asking for volunteers.
I've already had one.
Fetch looked at Oates.
Unless you've a change of mind.
Oates held her gaze,
She didn't challenge, didn't implore. He'd said he would go, standing in the great hall of Mongrel's cradle. Seemed years ago now, though it was hardly a fortnight. But much had changed. The chief looked to see if all that transpired since had affected his willingness to accompany one enemy into the realm of another. "No," he replied. "My mind's not changed. I'll go." Culprit stood up, taking a handful of dirt from the grave. "Me too."
"I ride where you ride, chief," Anvil declared.
"I'd hoped so," Fetch told her. "Because I'm staying here, and I didn't fancy trying to keep Thune from following you."
"You ain't going?" Culprit said.
Fetch shook her head. "Still a war to fight here."
"Then I'm with you," Warbler said. "Wouldn't be no damn use in civilized climes anywise."
"But I am," Sluggard said.
"And it will be interesting to lay eyes on this wizard you've all been cursing for so long. What do you say, Thresh? One last risky ride north?"
Thresher scowled at the ground. Her answer came through a tight jaw.
"Reckoned I was full quit with the kingdom. You order it, chief, and I will. But if I'm to say, then no."
"No orders," Fetch reminded her. She looked to Polecat and couldn't quite hide the struggle in her face. The mongrel appeared to be his old self for the first time since the betrayer, but Oates could see, and shared, the chief's uncertainty it would last. "Cat?"
Polecat scratched beneath his lip with a thumbnail.
"Sluggard, you know any decent brothels up there?"
"100 or 200.
"I'm in."
Jackal was last. He stood silent, still. His eyes darted once to Hood before fixing on Fetch. "What do you want me to do?"
"No orders," she said again.
"What do you want me to do?"
"Can you trust Hood?"
"No."
"Can you ally with Crafty?"
"No."
"Then you'll serve the hoof better from here."
Oates could see Jackal grappling with the truth of it, trying not to see it as some failure in his courage, or some folly in Fetch's reasoning. It didn't look like he fully succeeded with either struggle.
"How can you trust him?" Jackal asked the chief.
"I don't. But as Jrika said, he will nurture his own plans. And for now, those plans aid us."
"How can you know?"
"Because they already have. A rider from the Suns arrived last night. The fleet Crafty said Hisparta sent from Galissa? It arrived at the mouth of the Guadalquivir 3 days ago and met a blockade of Tyrkanian ships. The Hispartans withdrew. One of our Tradrian corsairs witnessed it and reported to Father. Without Tyrkania blocking the river, Kalbarka would already be back in the crown's hands. I've also had a bird from the Castile."
The chief reached beneath her brigand and removed a slip of parchment.
"Alamra says the army camped outside has not attacked. That she and Tarif were invited down to speak with their commander, a palaver that was mediated, her fucking word, by an envoy of the Sultan's. 3/4 of the Hispartan force broke camp and departed the next morning. She says those that remain are tasked with,"
Fetch read from the parchment,
"honorably escorting the leader of the half-orc uprising or any of her designated emissaries safely into Hisparta."
Oates grunted. "Tyrkani is doing everything Crafty said. The blockade, the Castile, all of it."
"He told us the Empire would move ahead with its plans, with or without us," Fetch agreed.
"The wizard's urging you to reconsider the without," Sluggard said. Fetch took a long breath.
"He asked if we would help ourselves, to wage war in the courts as well as the battlefields. Alamra volunteered to go, to act as my envoy, my voice. I've agreed. Couldn't ask for better. She knows how to handle herself with blue bloods of every hide. Likely she'll be our greatest strength up there, for this is the type of war she was trained for. But she's a true bastard and will need her brethren to back her. This chance won't come again. Time we took it. We've nothing to lose."
"Just the lives of those that go," Warbler pointed out.
Why I said it's the greatest danger I could ask this hoof to face, Fetch replied. Hispartha could decide to hang you all the moment you're over the border. Or wait until the queen and a throng can watch from some palace square in...
Fetch looked to Sluggard.
Where?
Majirit, Zahara, Vallisolidum? Sluggard shrugged up to his ears.
Hells, they might make a tour of it. Execute us one at a time at cities across the kingdom. The peons will love it.
Fuck, I can't decide if you're jesting, Polecat mumbled, going pale.
He ain't, Thresher said.
Fetch drew in a breath.
Crafty's assured me the crown fears a war with Tyrkania too much to risk angering the sultans. But his assurances don't count for shit, and I won't give you any. I'll just say this. Hisparta will be the death of us all if we lose this war. I don't know why Crafty wants us with him, but it's a chance we can't turn down. Not anymore. He's casting his net at the Frails. It'll be twisted and woven with lies, we know, but he'll be what he claimed, a scorpion in the crown's bedroll.
And somehow he'll use us to sharpen his sting, Oates said, looking hard at the bastards who had agreed to come.
What if he needs squashing? Polecat asked. Crafty's going to take more than a boot heel to crush, and not just because he's a fat fuck. Only one of you is going into Hisparta with any orders from me, Fetching said, her gaze fixing on Hood. When Crafty poses more danger than aid, he dies.
Hoodwink nodded.
Certain you can kill him, Hood? Culprit asked.
Yes.
And that blue demon of his, Oates said. Hood considered.
Fuctus will kill me, but only after the wizard is dead.
Madre, Sluggard marveled. Not speaking was key to you not telling the truth, wasn't it?
Culprit rubbed the shaved side of his head.
How will we know, Chief, when Crafty is too dangerous? Who decides that?
If there's time, you all do, as a hoof, Fetch replied. If not, Hood is free to act alone, or if either Alamra or Oates orders him, without question. Understood?
Another nod.
In dealings with Hisparta, Alamra speaks for me, the chief continued. In all other matters, Oates holds my vote.
And mine, Jackal said.
You get mine, young blood, Warbler said, clapping Culprit on the shoulder.
Me?
Reckon I'll take the Tyne's way and let the future of our hoof decide its path.
Thresh, Anvil, the chief said. Who'll have your votes?
The pair looked at each other for a moment. Thresher's lips moved, but she did not speak aloud. Anvil dipped her head.
I'll be taking both, Thresher said. We can't let Rue go up to Hisparta alone with all these swinging cods. They'll be too entranced with her backside and not watching her back.
I don't find Alamra all that comely, Culprit said. Polecat was aghast.
Are you blind, Backy, or both? No, just saying she's too thin for my tastes, so I can watch her back just fine and not get distracted, just like any other brother.
Careful, Oates, Sluggard said out the side of his mouth. Culprit may not be there when you need him. He'll be too smitten with your meaty ass.
That ain't what I said.
Thresher gave Fetch a dull stare.
Behold my fucking point.
The chief retrieved a pair of laden saddlebags from Wombroom. Oates had been so weary, so distracted, he hadn't noticed them on the ride.
Supplies for the journey, Fetch said, handing the bags to Culprit.
Sluggard grinned. You were in earnest, saying we weren't going back to Kalbarka.
No time to waste, the chief replied. Make for the Castile. Keep a sharp eye for Unyar riders. We can't trust them anymore.
Chief, I'd like to get back, Warbler said. My nerves are afire thinking on that city without us.
You and Anvil go, Fetch told him. Jack and I will be along.
Warbler took in the Hisparta-bound bastards.
Luck to you. Live in the saddle.
Oates answered soberly for them all.
Die on the hog, Warbor.
The old mongrel smiled.
Not today, I hope.
He mounted up as Anvil embraced Thresher. After, her single eye regarded the others from between the stiff drapery of her hair.
Fight hard, brothers.
The pair of Thrice-Bloods rode out of the Carob Grove. Didn't figure I'd be saying goodbye to more than one today, Culprit said, mouth twisting with regret. Thresher put an arm around him.
Come, let's be of use and get these victuals stowed. Cat, Slug, lend some hands.
Fetch turned to Hoodwink.
Best start scouting ahead.
Hood moved immediately for his hog. Oates stood quietly with Jackal and Fetch for a moment.
What will you do? He asked at last.
Depends what the Crown does, Fetch replied. If they march on Kalbarka, we will be forced to leave. But if Crafty can bring a halt to the war, even for a small while, we might be able to remain, refortify. If not, there's the Castile. At the least, I'm hoping we can stay here long enough for the Fangs to arrive. Nikisos says Starling might be able to awake in ruin.
Oates shook his head. Fetch, I wouldn't hold too tightly to him recovering. When the betrayer lashed out at him, it was... Words failed him.
I felt it, Fetch said, her voice taut and low. Trapped in the temple, I felt it when he was struck. It was as if a mountain of rage fell on me. That's what knocked me senseless. I've never been hit, never been hurt like that. But for all the pain, all the fury, what I felt most was this fucking certainty that the blow was far weaker than it could have been. As if whatever unleashed it was...
Like it was holding back, Jackal offered.
Fetch chewed on that for a moment before shaking her head.
Like it was bound.
Oates had never seen Fetching wear the apprehension that was now upon her face. She would keep fighting, he knew, defiant as ever, but she'd been shaken by the trials underground. He realized now that the physical torment he'd witnessed wasn't close to the full measure the chief endured.
If I hadn't stopped him, Oates said. If I'd let him go to you.
Then there would be a heap more bastard graves here than snakes, Fetch declared. You did right, Oates. So did Ruin.
Realization settled over Oates. The answer was so simple, he couldn't stop from laughing at himself. It came out small and humorless.
You sent him to me.
Yes.
Fetching looked down, rallied something inside. When her eyes came up again, they were bright and sharp as a freshly honed blade.
Soon as we were away from the hoof, Barsius touched me. Everything went dark. Felt like... Hells, I can't describe it.
Like someone reached up through your asshole, used your jaw as a handle, and pulled your head down into your stomach, Jackal said.
Fetch cocked her head in agreement.
I was dizzy. Sick. Those giants had me before I knew where I was. Zerko was there. He told me the betrayer had come, that my army would be slaughtered. But I felt Ruin getting closer. I knew he was coming for me. I needed him to save the hoof, not me. So I sent him to the one mongrel I knew would make fucking certain he did.
I ain't the only one, Oates said. Jack would have done the same. I would have.
You killed Ruin's pack, lover,
Fetch told him dully.
You did, Oates said. I did, Jackal sighed.
They all fought the smiles that were building, none truly winning.
You picked the right Thrice for the job, Chief, Jackal said. Then and now.
He stepped to Oates and embraced him.
Don't die up there, brother. Please. Can't swear to it. Oates said, squeezing hard. But I'll strive not to.
And if you do end up killing Crafty, Jackal said, breaking free, piss on his corpse for me.
After drinking an entire barrel of wine, Oates promised.
Fetch had drifted close, and he reached to haul her in.
If Culprit gets to do it, so do I.
Fetching kissed his cheek as he crushed her.
Watch out for them, she said.
I will.
The three of them stood in a rough, comfortable circle.
You know what this reminds me of? Fetching said.
a strange look upon her face. When the three of us would all sneak into the larder together when Beryl wasn't looking and filch all the persimmons.
Jackal's brows knitted. He glanced at Oates. This isn't anything like that, Oates said, chuckling.
Fetching looked at him for a long moment. No, you're right, it isn't.
They turned to find the hogs ready, the bastards mounted. Oates strode to Ugfuck and climbed into the saddle. We'll see this done, Chief, he said. Turning his hog, he led the true bastards away. Chapter 25. The plains beneath the Castile were forested with banners, the colors upon the fluttering cloth lurid against the dun expanse now awash in the tents of the Frail's encampment. The pavilions were worse than the pennants, garish beasts with silk skins striped in crimson and gold, blue, and ivory, and half a dozen other shades Oates couldn't put a name to. Smaller tents of undyed canvas were arranged in neat rows surrounding their resplendent bedders, armed men moving everywhere along the dusty lanes between.
Fuck my mouth, Polecat swore, gawking at the bustling camp. That's a small escort? Chief said most of the Frails fucked off back north.
She spoke true, Tarif replied, keeping his mare well in hand. The Zahrasin chief and 30 of his tribesmen had ridden out to meet the bastards. 5 times this number was here not a week past.
Oates hadn't taken any chances. He'd sent Thresher ahead to the Castile well before it was in sight to make sure they weren't trotting toward an ambush, a task that traditionally fell to Hoodwink. Choosing Thresh instead caused a moment of silent tension. Fetch told them they needed to trust each other, and Oates knew he'd just toss shit all over that notion, but the promise proved simpler than the practice. None said a word as Thresh spurred away, though Oates felt a hog's ass sitting in the silence. He was twice the ass once she returned with the Zahrasin's and Tarif's assurance that all was safe. They rode together through the Hisparthan camp, every Frail they passed stopping to eye them. The disdain was heavier in the air than the smell of unwashed men.
To the hells with you, too, Culprit muttered.
Halberdiers and arbalesters stood guard at numerous laden supply wagons. The men watching over the corrals were similarly armed, but double in number. Oates could now see distinct separations within the mass of men. Where the mongrel hoofs used tattoos, the humans used the colors of their lords. The azure falcon on the red banner outside one pavilion also adorned the tabards of all dwelling nearby. Past them, a bushel of some yellow crop upon a field of black took over the snapping pennants and breasts of the soldiers. Next, a sword-pierced scroll over quartered white and green. It wasn't one camp, Oates realized, but several, sharing the ground. Still, they were melded by purpose and a shared hatred of half-orcs. The Zahrasins put the bastards in the center of their formation, keeping a brisk pace until they reached the trail ascending the escarpment. The Castile sat above, high on its frowning crag. Soon the camp lay beneath them. The vantage only made the Hisparthan host appear larger.
5 times all of that and they didn't attack, Sluggard mused on the ride up to the fortress. Our Zahrasin friends were fortunate.
Alamra awaited them beyond the gate. She was the only bastard to wear linen instead of leathers and never bore a weapon save a sharp mind and honed civility. Her education, gained by a parade of tutors within the cloistered gardens of Far Sardis, was writ into her bearing. She stood flanked by Tarif's own bodyguards, men with massive scimitars held close across their chests. But any who didn't know better would take them for Alamra's own servants, warriors pledged to the service of some breath-stealing eastern princess. Standing at a slight remove was another, older man. Dressed in rich silks, his headscarf and dark complexion marked him for a Tyrkanian. 4 young women, their faces covered by veils, held poles attached to a brocaded awning over his head, blocking the sun. A faint smile rested behind his gray beard,
sharp eyes taking in the hoof as they reined up.
"True bastards," Alhambra said, her hand making a small, elegant gesture toward the man. "This is Orhan ibn Osman, Khatib of Alaeddin Nasr al-Din, Sultan of the oath-championed domains of Grand Tirkania. Khatib Orhan, allow me to present my brethren Oats, Thresher, Hoodwink, Culprit, Sluggard, and Polecat."
The old Tirkanian patted his hands together several times in a tiny, silent show of delight.
"You honor me, Emira," he told Alhambra, smile deepening.
Polecat dismounted with a prolonged moan of strain and stared artlessly at the women holding the awning, attempting to judge their figures beneath their layered silks.
"Never met a sultan before," he said, pulling a foot up behind his ass to stretch.
"And you do not now," Tarif proclaimed, giving the older man a look of naked loathing from atop his horse.
"Orhan ibn Osman is merely one of Aldin's servants, a serpent dressed as a man. It is good to see you again, my half-orc friends, but I will be delighted when you depart, for then there will be no more reason to host this spawn of a she-viper."
Expelling a word in his native tongue, Tarif spurred away, his tribesmen following.
"My apologies, Khatib," Alhambra said.
Her words were sincere, but she did not fawn nor display embarrassment. Orhan's narrow shoulders raised a hint.
"The Zahrasins are ever proud. Pride is what a man is left when all else has been taken from him. It is a pauper's treasure."
The old man's smile vanished, and there was spite in his voice. Oats dismounted.
"We should speak, Rue."
Alhambra dipped her chin. Oats was always struck by how small she was. Her mongrel blood certainly didn't show in her slight, graceful frame.
"If you will excuse my absence for a time, Khatib," she told Orhan.
The Tirkanian bowed. Alhambra said something to her guards in Urjar, leaving them behind as she turned and proceeded deeper into the castle yard. The bastards fell into step around her, leading their hogs.
"Old Swaddlehead's a bit of a cock," Culprit said when they were barely out of earshot.
"He's a powerful man," Alhambra said, without feeling. "Powerful men are, I have found, shit."
Thresher snorted a laugh. "Tarif's powerful," Sluggard said. "He's not bad."
"Tarif Abu Nusar was once powerful," Alhambra replied. "No longer. Men who survive such a loss often gain the virtue of humility."
"What about mongrels with decently big cocks and tireless tongues?" Polecat asked, pulling his sow quickly to draw even with Alhambra.
"They can be useful on rare occasions, if they learn to shut up and lick."
Polecat made a point of staying silent the rest of the way. The Zahrasins had constructed new stables to replace those that burned down when the bastards took the Castile. Tarif tended his mare with the aid of a groom in the foremost stall. Oats took Ugfuck past all the horses. The fresh-cut timber could still be smelled, even over the dung. Memory brought the clog of smoke to Oats's nostrils. He could still see the inferno of the old stables, still feel the panic. Untacking Ugfuck, Oats tried to put it out of his mind, but he rushed headlong into that blaze once more. Hells, he still didn't know how he'd found the boy. The smoke was an ocean, the heat a wall. Perhaps there were gods in the world, and one happened to be smiling on him. No, it would have been smiling on Murrow. He hoped it still was. After what he'd endured in his short life, the boy deserved to be happy and thriving down in Salduba. Oats also hoped Thistle was not still angry. The Castile had birds trained to reach the cradle. Perhaps there would be time to send a message.
"And say what?" Oats asked Ugfuck softly.
"Apologies for leaving you both. I'm now going even farther away. Into Hisparatha. Reckon I'll get killed. Murrow, wish we could play. Thistle, shouldn't have ignored you that night, but I'm a fool ass. Oats."
shaking his head. Oates knuckled Ugg between the eyes and left him snuffling in the stall. The bastards gathered around Alamra in the central aisle of the stable.
"I know you need rest," Alamra said. "However, it will be best if we do not tarry long."
She lowered her voice.
"Tarif's hatred of Orhan ibn Osman risks grievous offense with every moment."
"Hogs need until morning," Oates told her. "After that, we leave when you say."
"Good. Now that you have arrived, I will speak with Duke Ernan. He is envoy for the crown. As yet, he has not been forthcoming on which of the lords camped upon the plain will be accompanying us across the border."
"Where are we bound once in Hisparta?" Thresher asked.
"Orhan insists that we will ride directly to meet Uhad ul-Badir Taruk ul-Tani,"
Alamra replied.
"He has declined, in his slippery way, to reveal exactly where the wizard resides, despite much pressing from the Duke."
Culprit raised his hand.
"Uhad ul-Adir Blabluk ulala, that's crafty, right?"
"Yes,"
Alamra said, her patience a castle wall. Sluggard shook his head.
"I don't like it. We need to know where first."
"Agreed," Oates said. Alamra cast a look between them.
"Why?"
"Why?" Sluggard repeated with a breathy laugh. "Because it could change everything. Hisparta is vast. It would help us to know how long a journey we're facing. And that's the least concern. Rue, you're keen and well-trained, but you don't know Hisparta. There are bitter rivalries between the nobles, old feuds that go back generations. We need to know whose lands we will be crossing. In the kingdom, the where matters."
"It most certainly matters," Alamra said. "Crafty is in Hisparta, but has not yet come to court. We know this because Duke Ernan remains ignorant of his whereabouts. The Duke would not hesitate to make a choice of escort were it otherwise. If he knew which family hosted the wizard, his decision would be informed, not fettered. It is an ambitious house that would offer the Tyrkanians support. Yet they are all ambitious in Hisparta, each hungry for more power, so such knowledge does not shrink the list of culprits."
"That only happens when I'm cold."
Ignoring culprit, Alamra went on.
"The family that has taken Crafty into its protection is brave to risk the crown's wrath. Or desperate. Either could describe the Estravaras, who have no less than 4 times in Hisparta's history fought for the throne in open rebellion and live under the shadow of crushing debts as a consequence. Yet Duke Ernan's wife is the niece of Marques Estravara, so he might feel confident to rule them out, though it is rumored the Duke has not shared a bed with his notoriously cold bride in years. Perhaps Crafty has ensconced himself with one of the wealthier houses. The Tirado, come to mind. They hold the fur trade in a vice, resisting the rise of guilds, despite much pressure from Tradrian agitators. It could be argued they have more to lose than to gain, but there is a madness to be found in the grasping of wealth. Were Ernan to choose blindly, sending, say, Lord Froila d'Ortaza with us, it will come to blood if we set foot on Tirado land, for d'Ortaza was fostered there in his youth and ruined 2 of the late Baron Tirado's daughters, though it is widely whispered it was a son he was caught with, and the girls' reputations were sacrificed to keep the secret. So yes, sluggard, it does hold great import where Crafty has secreted himself. To the Hispartans. But I will ask again why it matters to us. Will we refuse to go if Orhan will not divulge his location? Will we tell the chief we could not continue our task because we felt undue caution over a matter we could not control? Crafty is where he is, plotting what he will. We will never discover where he is, nor what he intends from here. There is little advantage in knowing before we strike out. However, there is much to be gained from keeping Duke Ernan in the dark, for it keeps Hisparta unbalanced, which I would propose is to the benefit of the chief and our war against the crown."
Alamra arched an eyebrow.
"If you have other arguments, sluggard, I am prepared to hear them."
Slug held his palms up in surrender. I rue the day I opened my foolish mouth.
Hells, I've fucking missed you, Thresher said, giving Alamra a slap on the butt and causing the smaller woman to smile.
This Duke Hernan, Oates said, tugging his beard. He here in the Castile?
Yes, Alamra replied. It was prudent to our negotiations he be shown that hospitality.
Wasn't hospitalitous of him not to greet us, though, Culprit said.
He is the Duke of Bashidures, one of the most feared men in the kingdom, descended from giants.
Polcat made a rude noise. Alamra paused at the interruption, took a steady breath.
Brethren, I need you to hear me. The Duke believes it is beneath him to receive a band of half-breeds. From birth he was taught this, and nothing in his life has belied the fact. To him, you are nothing but my entourage, a gaggle of ash-coloureds sent by an upstart mongrel warlord, whom he oft refers to as a hog-fucking whore and a spend-swallowing hussy.
She studied them all with a steady eye.
I see Culprit bristling. Dacia, your fists are clenched. And Oates, your beard cannot hide the repeated bulging of your jaw. Already you are galled, though the words come only from me, delivered without rancor. The Duke will offend you by his very nature. He will not be the first. All of his ilk, every noble, their vassals, even their servants, will look down upon you. You must gird yourself against their scorn, beginning now, or we will fail. And swiftly.
Polcat shrugged. Won't be the first time I've been pissed on and asked for more.
Nor I,
Thresher said, with no trace of humor. But she shook her bunched fists until they relaxed and gave Alamra a reassuring nod. Unless they come at us with bare steel, they'll provoke no fight in me. Right, Oates sighed.
Abril,
Alamra said, slipping into her habit of eschewing hoof names.
You are still seething.
Culprit took a long breath and let it out slowly. I know. Pardons. Just hearing a frail call us those names boils my blood every time. But I can weather it. In earnest, I can.
You must, Alamra told him. You all must. The slights will not always be obvious. They may take you unawares. If you are uncertain if something is an insult, assume it is. But do nothing.
The hoof gave grunts and nods of agreement, save Hood, who remained still and silent. Oates reckoned they would all be wise to begin aping his example. There may have been some truth to Duke Hernan de Bashidures being descended from giants. He proved to be the biggest frail Oates had ever seen, equal in height and with a beard to rival his own. In his armor of enameled cobalt plate, he was nearly as bulky as well. He emerged from the keep not long after dawn, bearing no weapon save a long dagger at his belt. Shaped to punch through armor, it was more spike than blade. Orhan ibn Osman trailed the Duke, looking pleased. That's a shit-eater's grin if I ever saw one, Polcat said. Sluggard hummed in agreement. The bastards were already sitting their hogs in the yard when the Duke arrived. Alamra's idea. She wanted the man harried to make a decision, frustrated by the hoof being assembled before his own men, calling his competence into question. If Hernan was vexed at all, he did not show it. He called for his horse, but his strong voice was neither rattled nor infuriated. As his pages sprinted away, the Duke summoned waiting messengers to him, and they spurred away after brief, sober instruction. When they were gone, the man stood stolidly. He did not speak with Orhan ibn Osman, but neither did he purposefully ignore him. It was as if the old Tyrkhanian did not exist. Duke Hernan looked for all the earth that he was alone in the yard and perfectly at peace. The stallion brought to him was a massive animal. One groom held firm to the bridle, while another placed a stepped stool upon the ground to aid the Duke in mounting.
Culprit expelled a derisive snort at the sight. They were far enough away that only the hoof heard, but Oates saw Alamra stiffen. The stool was telling. To Culprit, it was a sign of weakness, but not to Oates. Hernan was a large man, made monstrously heavy by his armor. Using the stool spared his horse's back. It was a kindness, an acknowledgement that the animal had worth. The Duke rode toward them, slowing his horse enough to speak to Alamra.
I will accompany you myself.
His gaze never strayed to the rest of the hoof as he passed. Oates caught the thinnest thread of a smile pulling at Alamra's lips. She had barely enough orc blood to be considered a frailing, and lacked the strength to handle a hog, so she sat a Zahrasine gelding gifted her by Tarif.
You're pleased, Oates said in a hush, though the Duke was nothing now but the distant clink of horseshoes on stone.
Not knowing the right man, he sends the best man, himself. We have removed, at least for a time, his presence from the lots. The crown's most experienced general, and he is leaving the field to serve as a guide. Yes, I am pleased.
Across the yard, Orhan ibn Osman crawled atop his own horse, aided by his serving women. Four mules waited to serve as their mounts. Oates had been surprised to learn that the Tyrkanian emissary traveled with no other protection. He wondered, not for the first time, if the Sultan's envoy was another sorcerer of the Black Womb. Hood might know, but Oates hadn't found the moment to ask. No. In truth, he hadn't found the fucking spine after doubting him. Tarif approached on foot.
I wish you good fortune and sharp senses, he told them all. And I implore you once again to accept some of my tribe to journey with you. Your generosity honors us, Sheikh, Alamra said. This is for us to do. Our tribe.
Tarif dipped his head.
As you will. I shall send word to fetching of all that has transpired.
Thank you, Oates said.
Tarif backed away, raising a hand in parting. Down on the plain, Duke Hernan had mustered 20 cavaleros. These weren't the penniless exiles typical to the Lot lands. All were richly equipped in burnished armor, their tabards, shields, and the pennants fixed to their lances boasting all manner of color and devices.
Minor lords sworn to the service of Bashadurus, Thresher explained as the bastards watched the final preparations.
Duke Hernan's own banner depicted a great splayed red hand rising from a black chasm against a storm-gray field.
One of them weren't who you ran off from, I hope, Polkat muttered.
No, Thresher said. Their lands rest on the northern coast and in the mountains there, far from where I was. But we heard stories of the Duke, even in the fields.
Stories? Like what?
Blaring horns cut off any answer Thresher might have given. The cavaleros began to move without word or glance given to the half-orcs.
Come, Oates said, clicking his tongue.
Ugfuck trundled forward, settling into an easy pace behind the horses. The bastards kept enough distance to spare themselves the worst of the dust. Behind them came Orhan ibn Osman and his tiny mule train. Culprit hooked a thumb backward.
Ain't he the only one who knows where we're going?
Sluggard cocked his head wryly. At the moment, brother, we all know where we're going. Hisparta. He pointed north. And it's that way.
Chapter 26. A strident, wailing cry jerked Oates awake. His head did not lurch away from the saddle. His hand did not dart to grasp his thrum as they had the first night. And the fourth. The anguished voice that burst through the bastard's slumber was no longer alarming, only heartrending. Oates rose and moved toward the ruckus in the dark. Sluggard grappled with Polecat's flailing arms, tried to quiet his screaming with soothing words.
We have you, brother. Calm yourself. We're here, Cat. We have you.
Culprit and Thresh stood nearby,
ready to jump in should the fit be too much for one mongrel. Polecat's face stretched in terror, mouth agape as it threw his stricken voice into the sky. His eyes were sightless and rolling. Sluggard continued to contain the worst of his thrashing, but there was no blunting the screams. The dark produced other voices, angry words from the Frail's camp, shouting abuses. As always, there were encouragements to end the fuss with a thrumbolt. The hoof never responded. At last, Polecat calmed, slumping in Sluggard's arms, feeble moans tumbling from his lips. They all stood for a moment, waiting to see if he would kick up again, but he succumbed to a twitching slumber.
"Not as bad as last night," Culprit whispered, desperate to find some good.
The bastards ambled back to their bedrolls. Oates needed a piss first. He moved away from their little camp to find a likely tree. Best thing about his Spartha, pissing against trees. He went toward the Cavalero's camp. If he couldn't holler back at them, he would at least loose his cock and water in their direction. The Umbers were a day behind them, the broken, rocky valleys giving way to sparsely wooded uplands. They were now well beyond the border demarked by the mountains, reaching the fortress of an outmarcher lord just before dusk, the first sign of settlement since leaving the Castile. The baron of the place invited Duke Hernan to spend the night within his castle, a courtesy not offered to Orhan ibn Osman or Alamra. The Tyrkanian envoy was spitting mad at the injustice, disappearing into his pavilion after staring daggers at the departing duke's back. He enacted a small revenge on the Cavaleros, tormenting them by having noisy sex with his serving women. The bastards had shared a laugh at his barbed pettiness.
"Old Coot still has some iron," Thresh said. "Helped by an herbalist's powder, no doubt," Alama replied, in the dry tone that was as close as she ever came to jesting.
Polecat had an expert ear cocked intently toward the pavilion. He shook his head.
"He's only cracking one of them, and she's doing the work. The others are just making sounds.
Old fraud.
What do you say, brethren? Should I strip down, stride in there, and show him how it's done?"
"Hells no," Oates said, at the same instant as Thresher.
"Please do not," Alamra added.
"Or I could go in there and bugger him," Polecat offered. "Save those poor women the effort."
"And if Orhan wishes to be the plow?" Alamra challenged.
Polecat put on a mummer's coy face.
"Well, he is very dignified."
Alamra's famed composure shattered into a genuine smile that she quickly tried to conceal with a hand, igniting a bout of fresh laughter among the hoof.
"Oh!" Cat exclaimed, pointing. "I got her! I got her!"
Hells, that was the great pain of it. He was so often the old Polecat. The journey had banished the bouts of mute, leagues-long staring, the sudden confusions. But what was buried in the daylight came sprouting up with the night. It had nearly come to blood the first time. Cat's screams had brought the men posted to sentry duty rushing into their midst with swords and maces in hand. Thankfully, Hoodwink struck first, disarming three of the Cavaleros in an eye blink, giving the remaining two cause to ponder the odds. When their eyes in torchlight fell upon the writhing, senseless Polecat, the men relaxed. It was obvious that the source of the outcry wasn't a threat. They departed with disgusted looks.
"You half-breeds sleepwalk as well as screech like children?"
So captured by his own thoughts, Oates hadn't noticed the Cavalero standing watch. The man didn't have a torch, though the starlight in this high country bathed the surrounds well enough.
"Where are you headed, Sootskin?"
The Cavalero was half a stone's toss ahead of Oates, and a little to his left.
"Here's good," Oates replied, and unlaced his breeches.
His stream covered most of the distance, falling just short of the Cavalero's boots. The man held his ground. Oates looked him square in the face during the entire piss. The days in the saddle were many, but often short. The Duke, more interested in sleeping beneath a roof than covering ground, ordered the cavalcade to halt at every town, manor, and castle. Sometimes the column would be done traveling before noon. The crawling pace scoured the bastard's patience raw, an irritation further chafed by the Duke forbidding them entry to any settlement. Polecat had groused, but Alamra remained insistent they offer no protest. The slow procession, insisting they sleep rough, it was all a calculated drip of disrespect, meant to erode Orhan ibn Osman's endurance, force him to reveal their destination. Yet the Tyrkhanian envoy was as stubborn as he was venomous. Each morning the Duke sent a man to ask Orhan where they were bound, and each morning the sneering coot would answer with a single word, north. And so they rode, the border keeps dotting the outmarch, slowly giving way to vast, ochreous plains filled with reddled sheep, threaded with the crystal waters of descended mountain streams, thick with trout. Oates didn't know land could be so vibrant, so beautiful. He said so, and Sluggard laughed. Just wait, the smiling mongrel replied, breathing deep of the fragrant spring air. Just wait. Thresher echoed the words, but not the tone, and her scarred face bore no joy. They traveled upon the ancient, invincible roads of the Imperium, the bend of their course remaining unshakably northward. Orhan's continued mulishness caused Duke Ernan to adopt new dalliances. He tarried a full 2 days in one town as the guest of its mayor domo because, according to Alamra, he found the local wine to be exceptional. That had been Oradal. Or perhaps it was Madre's Crossing, though that may have been where they languished for 3 days beside yet another wheat field, so the Duke could romance one of the serving maidens at the taverna. Oates couldn't recall. The names were beginning to blur, just like the towns themselves. All he'd seen of them was what could be spied as they passed through to begin another spate of easy, tedious riding. The villages close to the border had been little more than outposts, a few mean hovels huddled around a well. Only the furtive, hard-eyed stares from behind cracked shutters betrayed the places weren't abandoned. Past the outmarches, civilization began to bear less shriveled fruit. The hovels became proper houses, and the folk risked coming into the sun to cast their mistrustful stares. The hogs grew restless by the second week, yearning to leave the sluggish confines of the road, to flee the flat stones and surge into the rolling country. They wanted to run. Given the chance, Oates reckoned, the barbarians would turn south and gallop with a desperate speed back to dry Ulwandulas, back to the dust and the seared rocks, back to the war, back home. Well, perhaps not all of them. Pala appeared content to trudge deeper into the kingdom, needing no guidance from Sluggard, who sat languidly in the saddle, weaving a garland of yellow broom and blue cornflowers gathered at their previous, none too distant camp. When the wreath was done, he drifted back to Alamra and placed the decoration upon her horse's neck. "Think our gritter's glad to be back," Oates muttered to Ugfuck. He'd adopted a habit of riding at the rear of the hoof, removed from the others, with only the trailing Tyrkhanian envoy and his servants behind him. "He's afraid." Oates startled at Hoodwink's thin voice, his head darting to the left to find the pale killer riding beside him. "You do that on purpose?" Oates asked, annoyed. "Or can you simply not fucking help it?" There was a long silence.
"Jrika suggested I should wear a bell," Hood said at last.
Oates couldn't stop himself from huffing with amusement. "Lucky you didn't creep up on her and get a telling off from Bellico."
"That happened once. I was unconscious for 2 days."
Oates looked hard at Hood's profile. He couldn't tell if he was jesting. "No, likely not." Oates let out a grunting giggle. Hood peered at him.
"I do not jest."
Oates was belly laughing now, near to bursting. Through watery eyes, he saw the others turn in their saddles to stare. He carried on more than was warranted, but it felt too good to restrain. Each time he tried to compose himself, the thought of Hoodwink knocked heels over ass by a spooked Jrika sent him into fresh, gut-shaking peals.
"Oh,
Oates managed, between an unsteady drumbeat of chuckles.
Wished I'd seen that.
It nearly killed me.
Oates erupted again, feeling a cunt, but unable to help himself.
It was after I awoke that she asked to be taken to the Black Womb.
That put a cork in Oates's mirth. He stuttered to a stop and cleared his throat.
Shit.
In Winsome, Zrika had made a lark of expressing an attraction toward Hoodwink. At least, he'd thought it was a lark, for what woman would ever be drawn to a hairless, scarred, dead-eyed mongrel the color of a dead frog's belly? Or, as Oates now knew, the color of a long-dead man's skin? One woman, at least, he realized. Oates didn't know if it was a gift granted by Bellico or birth, but Zrika did have a way of seeing deeper than what was there.
Hood, Oates ventured. Can you tell me where she went?
No.
Wagered not.
Now, what's this about Sluggard being afraid? He steals himself with smiles, lies to himself that the beauty of this land is a welcome sight. He is afraid, hiding behind a face long lost to him.
Well, losing all he's lost, that would have killed most mongrels, Oates said. I'm not going to judge him harshly for a little fear. Hells, I got more than my share, being earnest.
Are you?
Am I what?
Being earnest. Or is your fear the same as Sluggard's smiles? A thing displayed from habit, but no longer real.
Oates didn't answer. He didn't need to, because there wasn't even a hint of a question in Hood's heartless voice. The first windmill was a delight to behold. Oates had heard of them, but the only one built in the lots was on the Tusked Tides land and burned down when he was still a slophead. He'd only seen the charred skeleton. This one, standing above the golden fields, sails turning with a lulling speed, was a welcome distraction during the plodding span it was in view. It held him queerly captivated. There was something marvelous, even menacing, about the way the latticed blades perched atop the tower, turning against a backdrop of cloud shot through with spears of sunlight.
Elaketon's arrows, Sluggard had named those heavenly bursts. They're only so bright in spring, and only in the heartlands of Hisparatha.
There was no pretty name for the folk toiling beneath the revolving shadow of the mill. They were too far away to be more than stooping shapes among the wheat, but it wasn't long before the column passed a group working closer to the road. The scythes were wielded by men. They wore sandals and straw hats. The half-orcs sweating behind them, gathering and bundling the reaped stalks, were barefoot, heads and backs exposed to the demanding sun. There were five of them, one only a boy with the paler skin of a frailing. The grown male looked nearly as old as Warbler, though he was no thrice blood. The three females were younger, one sticking close to the child. Her son, Oates knew in his gut. He wondered which of the two human overseers sitting on their mules with coiled whips in their fists had fathered the boy. One of the men looked up and saw him staring. The surprise at seeing a hog-mounted, hoof-inked, armed half-orc quickly crawled into a scowl. His arm came up, jerked down, the motion almost lazy. The old mongrel grunted as the whip lashed the back of his legs. His pace quickened, and he dumped his load in the wain, rushing back for another bundle. Oates pulled Ugfuck to a halt, his sudden fury causing the hog to snort in complaint.
Oates.
It was Alamra, the use of his name a reminder. Hells, he didn't care. Damn all vows and restraint. The whip-cracking fuck was one blow from Oates's fist removed from a broken skull. He could already feel the satisfaction in his knuckles, his mouth watering at the prospect of swift retribution. Thresher rode up and blocked his view of the overseer. Her face, hatched with livid scars, was stern.
Don't fuck us, she said. If I can ride away, you damn well will too.
Oates swallowed the bile in his throat and nudged Ugg on. The slaves were left behind. The Duke abandoned the column for the comfort of his next host, and the hoof lazed for the remainder of another day as the hot sky paled to citron, then to lilac. The cavaleros were resupplied at every town and village. The bastards were left to fend for themselves. Fortunately, they had Hoodwink, who rarely failed to find game even in pitiless Ulwundulas. In teeming Hispartha, their cook fire never went without a brace of hare or clutch of fowl. It was Culprit who asked the question. Why do they suffer it? His voice was meek, sincere. The chewing slowed, every glance falling upon Thresher. The meat in her hands hovered in front of her mouth. There's little choice, she said at last, answering the fire. She took another bite. They could run off, like you. Thresh grunted. On foot, with nothing. Men on horses with cudgels on the trail. With hounds, too, most times. You can hide, run, but hunger catches you no matter how fast you go. All the gods worshipped here, and not one temple will offer succor to a half-orc. Peasants will turn you over out of fear, out of hatred. There's not a friend for a runaway anywhere in this kingdom, Cull. Running's a choice, but it ain't much of one. Culprit frowned as he grappled with that cold truth. He made a strong effort to brighten. Well, I'm glad you made it then. Yes, Thresher said with a humorless chuckle, looking around at the dark beyond the fire. Because I managed to get really fucking far. Oates stared down at the nearly stripped bone between his fingers. Since before he could feed himself, he'd known the orcs wanted to conquer Hispartha. As a hoof rider, he learned that Tyrkanya too coveted this kingdom, yearning to make it part of their empire. He was now possessed by the same desire as the Fix and the Sultans, to bring steel and fire to this land. Not because he wished to seize its beauty, but because he needed to rid the earth of its ugliness.
Fuck roads and the hind ends of all horses.
Polecat uttered the words, but it had become something of a second creed to all of them. Nearly a month in the saddle. Nearly a month, and still they were nowhere. The bastards could have walked the length of Hispartha if not hampered by the peevish game between Duke Ernan and Orhan ibn Osman. Another day of chewing on the cavalero's grit. Another day of passing peasants forced off the road by the cavalcade, making way for the blue bloods, even if it meant their wagon breaking a wheel or their flock scattered. Every herdsman, farmer, family, and merchant yielded the way without complaint, heads bowed, eyes downcast. Only when the cavaleros were past did they look up. Perhaps on any other day they might have risked a rude gesture or a barbed stare, but any small displays of resentment that might have surfaced were smothered by the sight of the hoof. Half-breeds riding hogs was outlawed, and the flaunting of that decree never failed to widen the eyes of the peasants, slack a few jaws. And there were more than enough insults flung from the bravest, gobs of spit from the most vicious.
"We ain't the reason you're standing in the ditch," Culprit shouted, when a particularly daring shepherd boy pelted them with goat shit.
On it went, their progress marked only by subtle changes in the countryside. Stands of pine and blankets of pink oleander decorated the fields, here and there backed by distant hills. But Hisparth's comely climbs ceased to hold Oates's attention. His mind kept turning back to the lots. He'd spent a month on a tedious trek, but time for fetch would not have passed so dully. Did she still hold Kalbarka? Had Starling arrived? Ruin awoken? Was the Crown's offer of a temporary peace in earnest, or were they merely stalling so fresh armies could arrive and finish the weakened hoofs? Hells, there was no way of knowing. Whatever messages the Duke received were not shared. Alamra had succeeded in meeting with him only a handful of times during the journey, and the man was never forthcoming, voicing only his contempt for Orhan and demanding Alamra convince the Khatib to reveal their destination.
On the 33rd day since leaving the Castile, there was a change. Orhan ibn Osman paused at a crossroads. The heedless Duke Hernan and his neglecting cavaleros continued northward. Without word or warning, the Tyrkhanian and his woman took the branching road to the northwest. Oates was the first to notice and whistled at the hoof. They all turned in the saddle, pulling their hogs to a halt upon seeing the departing envoy.
"Reckon we should follow him," Thresher said.
Oates grunted in agreement. Polecat cocked a head at the heedless cavaleros. "And them?"
"They will realize their error before long," Alhambra said. "I tired of supping on their dust."
She spurred her horse to follow the Tyrkhanians. Oates grinned at the others. "You heard her. Let's ride." The hogs needed little encouragement. Given their heads for the first time in weeks, they surged up the road, catching up with Orhan swiftly. Oates signaled the hoof to ride past him, drawing whoops from Cat and Culprit. He'd be damned if they weren't going to churn some ground before the Duke caught up and hobbled them with his dying cow's pace. If the Cavaleros wanted to reclaim the front of the column, they could fucking earn it. They strung out in a long single file, Sluggard in the lead on Pala, the fastest barbarian among them. Culprit and Polecat made a contest of second, Thresher content in third. Oates and Ugfuck were next, Hood behind them. Alhambra remained with Orhan, no doubt making an effort to calm his ill humor at nearly being trampled by a half-dozen thundering barbarians. Sluggard broke away from the road, pulling Pala left to jump the bordering ditch and plunge into the neighboring field. The hoof, trained to the instincts of the lead rider, followed without hesitation. As Ugfuck bounded over the ditch, Oates caught a glimpse of something in the road ahead. An ox cart. Sluggard had led the hoof off the road so that the travelers wouldn't be forced to give way. Something in that small kindness, that defiance of the very nature of Duke Hernan and his ilk, kindled a fire in Oates's heart. Coupled with the speed of Ugfuck running free, that fire propelled a joyous shout from his lungs. Rough ground, open country, those were the realms of the hoof rider. To all the hells with paving stones and the whims of noblemen. And Sluggard, that glorious bastard, sensing the need of his brethren, didn't swing back to the road, even after passing the cart. He led the hoof into a full gallop, cleaving a trail through tall grass and wildflowers. The race between Polecat and Culprit matured from a lark to a true contest. Charging abreast, close enough to throw elbows at each other, they laughed as they rode. Leaning, Oates shifted Ugg's course with nothing but the weight of his body, angling farther away from the road. He caught up to Thresher on his right, Hood drew even on his left, and the three of them fanned out across the field, banishing the constraints of the last weeks. They did not let up until their hogs were nearly spent. Slowing their huffing mounts to a walk, they clustered, sharing satisfied grins and pulls from their water skins. They were in the middle of an untended wheat field, heavy with nodding poppies. The hogs pushed through the bristling heads, the stalks whispering as they bowed over.
"Any notion where we are?"
Polecat asked, wiping his newly wetted lips with the back of his hand.
"None,"
Thresher replied, squinting ahead at a dark line of encroaching pine. Sluggard shook his head. It wasn't long before the woods forced